Have you ever wondered how certain people become so rich, become so successful? Well, if you've been listening to my podcasts or reading my blogs or books, you know that rich people don't become rich by luck or by accident. Accumulating wealth requires hard work, dedication, and most importantly, maintaining a specific set of habits that foster prosperity. We are what we repeatedly do. That means excellence isn't an act, but it's a habit. Now, my good friend Tom Corley spent 5 years studying millionaires and gathering insights which became the basis of his blogs that appear regularly on Property Update and his books, including the one we co-authored, Rich Habits, Poor Habits. He found that people became wealthy, practice certain habits. And that's what we're going to discuss in today's episode of the Michael Yardney podcast. Considering there are so many habits, we're going to break this up into a two-part series. Today we're going to start with the first of 25 habits that the rich do that differentiate themselves, that make them more successful than the average person. Now, as you learn, it's not your fault if you were born poor, but it is your fault if you die poor. So learning these habits could be just what you need to develop the success in life you're looking for. So welcome to today's show.
Welcome to the Michael Yardney Podcast, where twice each week you will learn a number of new ideas regarding success, property investment, and money in around 30 minutes. Our show is brought to you by Metropole, who specialize in helping you grow, protect, and pass on your wealth through strategic property and wealth advice. Now, here's your host, Michael Yardney, Australia's authority in wealth creation through property, who has been voted one of Australia's top 50 most influential thought leaders.
Well, over 30 years ago, I began my study of the rich and successful people. Of course, not all rich people are successful, and not all successful people are rich. But remember, I was much younger then. I was more naive. I wanted it all. I tried to understand why some people were rich while others kept struggling financially. Then over the years, I attended many seminars, I paid mentors, I read as many books as I could on the topics of success and wealth, and I modeled successful people, and I eventually grew successful myself. It wasn't easy. I had my challenges in life. Unfortunately, most of them were self-inflicted. I've hit rock bottom and I've got up again. And I've learned from my mistakes and I move forward. And now for almost two decades, I've mentored over 3,000 successful and some not successful people, investors, business people, entrepreneurs. And a byproduct of this was a book that I wrote with my good friend Tom Corley, Rich Habits, Poor Habits, which has become an international bestseller and translated into a number of different languages. In it, Tom and I explain that being rich has little to do with the money itself. Instead, it's how you think about money. So today, I'm going to start a series of a couple of podcasts with Tom, where we are together going to share with you the success habits of the rich people that we outline in our book, Rich Habits, Poor Habits. Hello, Tom.
Hey, Michael. It's good to be with you again.
Well, it's a new year, and we've gone through a difficult, interesting year in 2020, one of those years most people are going to want to forget, but it's not going to be easy to forget. So I'd like to go through a list of the success habits, the rich habits that we have found that your clients from your study and my clients have, that they exhibit, so we can see what's going on. And maybe we can put them into some context for this new era we're now living in. So Tom, let's just start through with the list. The first one is that I've found that the average person thinks about spending their money, but the rich have a different system, different habits. They look to invest their money.
Yeah, that's right. And according to my research, Michael, specifically with respect to the saver investors and the virtuosos, these are the experts in their field, they really make a habit out of, you know, saving their money. But in order to get to that point, they have to adjust their standard of living so that they have enough money to save. And you know, you can't invest what you don't have. So the number one thing that you have to do is you have to get into a habit of saving some percentage of your income, even if it's just 5%, you got to start somewhere. And especially if you're young, the younger people, the more that they're able to save at an earlier age, the wealthier they'll become because of the power of compounding and just the time that they have the money working for them. So yeah, it's a very important concept. It's one that everybody talks about, but very few people, you know, actually forge that habit.
Well, Tom, really it has to do with delayed gratification, doesn't it? But that seems hard when you're young. That's so far away. I'll get to doing it all later on. I don't have to do it just yet.
Yeah, and the problem is if you have no blueprint for your life, if you don't know where you're going, if you don't have what I call get engaged in this dream setting process where you create some type of future script of what your life is going to look like, well, then you're like a leaf on a fall day. You're just floating around. The wind will take you wherever it takes you. And so you have to have some vision, some clarity on where you want to go. That anchors you. You know, it becomes like a stop sign or a red light that says, hey, don't spend this money recklessly because, you know, that you know, $1,000 that you're going to spend will one day be worth about $30,000.
That's a good point that I know when we sit with our clients to give them property advice, it all starts with a plan, which is really bringing your future into the present and doing something about it. I know while you're a CPA, you've also got a financial planning diploma and work with as a financial planner. And that's the boring bit. That's not the sexy bit. It's not the exciting bit in the short term, but it does give you the wherewithal to know what to do and what not to do and what's realistic, Tom.
Yeah, a lot of people think that becoming wealthy, well, you know, wealthy people have this exciting lifestyle. And the reality is, especially if you look at people like Warren Buffett, I wouldn't want his life. His life is so boring, I would fall asleep if I was in his shoes. I mean, that guy literally does the same thing every single day. And his standard of living, you know, you might think, well, he has an enormous standard of living. He doesn't. And he's happy drinking a Coke and eating a hamburger every single day. I mean, and he lives in the same house he purchased, I don't know, 40 years ago. So, you know, everybody has this perception of wealth that is not actually realistic. It's completely different. The reality of it is completely different. And the work that has to go into building wealth is, in some cases, time consuming if you're a virtuoso, a big company climber, or an entrepreneur. Very time consuming. You have to put in the hours, and the people just, you know, maybe they're not willing to do that. That's you know, their choice. But you know, there's different ways that you become wealthy, and one of them is the saver investor path, and that means delayed gratification, putting off things until, you know, down the road. And people, maybe they don't want to do that, and that's fine. But they're never going to become wealthy if they can't save.
Well, as we're going through the various success habits, rich habits of successful people, I think the average person thinks you've got to work hard to become rich, while the rich really know that you've got to use leverage to become wealthy.
Yeah, and I like that, the way you put that, because the leverage is many things, right? Leverage, we think of leverage in the financial community as leveraging, you know, say you have $100,000, well, maybe you can buy something for $500,000. But there's also the leverage of your relationships, right? So you have these influencers that I talk a lot about. You want to develop relationships with influencers. These are people that can open up doors. Well, you want to leverage those relationships. You know, if you have a opportunity and you don't have the money to finance the opportunity, if you have, you know, a stable of influencers that you can lean on, you might be able to get the working capital that you need. So there's a lot of ways you can use leverage to your advantage.
You're right, Tom. So it's not just leveraging money, it's leveraging relationships, but also leveraging your time. Successful investors have learned how to use their time more effectively. They've learned not to waste their time, and also leveraging their knowledge. Once you've got knowledge, you can actually use it to make more money, do more things, get more done, Tom.
Yeah, and the more that you know, the more opportunities you see. You know, it's like the way I like to describe it is, if you think about yourself standing at the bottom of a hill, that hill represents growth or knowledge. When you climb that hill, as you get to the top, when you have more knowledge and you've grown into an individual that is, you know, I guess you could say maybe an expert in their knowledge base, what that expert sees is completely different than what the ordinary person sees, because their knowledge allows them to see so many more opportunities. You know, then their opportunities are all over the place. Most of us just can't see them because we don't have the knowledge and the know-how to be able to you know, identify them.
That's true. Of course, also what we said a moment ago about having a plan makes a difference, because if you have a plan, if you know what you want to achieve, if you know where you want to go, there's that inbuilt reticular activating system, your GPS, that goes out and searches for the things that are going to help you achieve what you want to achieve. And at the same time, it helps filter out all those other bits of information that you don't need at the time.
Yeah, that's a good point. And that goes into a lot of my brain science research. The RAS, or the reticular activating system, is part of the thalamus. And the thalamus is responsible for allowing, it's like the reception area for your senses. If the sensory data comes in from the environment, the thalamus filters it through the reticular activating system. And then the RAS says yay or nay to the information. And if it says nay, your conscious mind isn't even aware of that outside sensory information. And that's why goals and dreams are so important, because actually they become points of interest for the RAS and the thalamus. They start looking for things in the environment that are related to your dreams and your goals. And then they pass those things on to your prefrontal cortex, your conscious mind. And voila, you see an opportunity, or you see something that somebody else doesn't see.
That's interesting. I remember years ago when I was teaching my son Harrison how to drive, we were driving down the road and he said, "Hey, Dad, look at all the Toyotas," because in fact he was interested in getting a Toyota. And I said, "Where, Harrison? Look at all the Mercedes." So it depends what your focus is as to what you see. It's like that if you are about to buy a Toyota, all of a sudden you see all the white Toyotas on the street. They were always there, but suddenly your reticular activating system finds them and points them out to you.
Yeah, that's exactly right. That's a good metaphor example.
So when we're looking at the rich habits of successful people, another one, Tom, is that they don't procrastinate. They don't spend their life waiting for the exact right time, waiting till they know it all or they've figured everything out. They know they've got to have a base knowledge, get a level of information around them with a good team around them, and then just find out the rest as they move along their path.
Yeah, that's important, because one of the rich habits is to do it now. I call it the do it now rich habit. And when you procrastinate, at some point you've got to get done what you've got to get done. And for most people, they're procrastinating because it's some task that they don't want to do. It's something that is a grinding out task and they don't want to do it. And so they put it off. And what happens more often than not is when they have to engage in whatever activity it is that they're procrastinating on, they're in a rush. And whenever you rush on anything, you open the door to mistakes, things slip through the cracks. The quality of the product or service is not as good as it might otherwise be. And the downside of all of this rushing because you procrastinate is you could find the mistakes that you make could find yourself in a court of law, you know, because somebody sued you because you didn't do what you were supposed to do. And so you don't want to procrastinate. You lose customers, you lose clients if you don't meet their expectations. And whenever you're rushing to do anything, you're not going to meet someone's expectations. You're going to fall short. And, you know, in the worst case scenario, you got a lawsuit. In the best case scenario, you lose a customer or a client when you procrastinate.
So what we're showing is that the wealthy people think differently. They have different habits. The rich habits they have show them there's no such thing as job security. While the average person believes their job gives them security. Boy, if 2020 didn't teach you anything, you'd know that's not the case.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you know, how many people found themselves out of a job, furloughed? And I know a lot of my clients who run their own businesses, they actually had some of the best year ever on record. And one of the reasons is that, you know, they saw opportunities, they took advantage of the opportunities, and they didn't have to rely on an employer to tell them yes or no. They could move very quickly. So I think having, you know, a job is, if that's what you want to do and that's, you're going to stick to that job, and then you know, it might be a perfect fit for you. And and as a saver investor, you might be able to accumulate some money. But you know, if you really want to become wealthy, it's a hard path to accumulate wealth by just working for somebody. It's going to take you a long time, according to my research, about 32 years, and you got to diligently save and invest. So, I think that having a job is, you know, that's one way of doing it, but it's not going to really result in you accumulating an enormous amount of wealth.
There's no doubt we're going to need to have a job, and you need to save and you need to put some money aside, whether you're going to invest or whether you're going to start a business. But having a job isn't enough. You need a job plus, because if you don't have your money working for you when you're asleep, if all you're depending upon is your own personal exertion income, there's only so many hours you can work. There's only so much you can work, and then things get in the way. And it doesn't have to be something earth-shattering like a coronavirus, but it can be other illnesses, or there's always going to be downturns. So I think one of the big differences between the rich and the average person is the rich are committed to becoming rich, Tom, while most people, they want to be rich, but boy, there's a big difference between being committed and wanting.
Yeah, and what I found in my research is the way they get committed is because almost everyone starts out having a job working for someone. But what I noticed in the millionaires that I studied is that a good percentage of them, about 51%, they started something on the side, a side gig. They wanted to create multiple streams of income, which was, in my research, 65% of the self-made millionaires had at least three streams of income, right? And some 48% had four streams, and 24% had five or more streams. So the rich are tuned in to the importance of having multiple income streams. Now, it takes time to build up each income stream, but you can do it on the side. If you have a job, you can. I wrote five books, and I'm running a CPA firm, a financial planning firm. You did the same thing. You're running a business, and you still had time to write all these books, all your books. So you can do things on the side with your free time, especially as your kids get older. That's why it's important to start something when your kids are young. Just start something. Just get in the habit of creating an additional revenue stream when they're young, because when your kids get older, you'll find you'll have more time to devote to building that revenue stream. And then what I also found in research is that once one revenue stream sort of becomes ripe and it starts generating cash flow, it allows you to create complementary revenue streams that add and feed into your existing revenue streams. And so there's, you know, you want to start one, because one can lead to two, to three, to four. And then before you know it, when you're at retirement, you've got five or six revenue streams that you don't have to rely on a job.
Well, 2020 taught us the importance of that. How many people who had multiple income streams, such as you, such as me, still had a really good year, while those who were dependent on just one income stream unfortunately found that dried up, didn't they? So I think one of the other big differences between the rich and the average person is that when things go wrong, and things do go wrong, people don't see that. They see the highlight reels of the rich people and how well they've, what they've learned to it, what they've achieved and how well they're living, but they don't see all the things that go wrong. But the rich have learned when things go wrong, they look for a lesson. They find a way of improving next time, while the average person sees problems and blames other people. I found there's no such thing as a rich victim. They don't blame other people. They take responsibility and they learn from it.
Yeah, and until you take responsibility, Michael, you're never going to learn from the lesson, right? If you blame somebody else, every time something goes wrong, it's somebody else's fault. You're never going to learn the lessons you need to learn in order to grow and become better at what you do. So it's important. That's why we talk about, you and I, a lot, you know, this self-reliance. Well, it's not just, you know, a capitalist concept. It's a concept that means when you take responsibility for your life, it means you take responsibility for the mistakes and the failures, because you're taking responsibility, you're learning from them. If you don't take responsibility, you'll never learn from them. So being self-reliant is all about learning from what you did wrong, and then using that down the road, because when you know what to do and what not to do, it saves you a lot of time and money down the road.
Well, that leads into one of the other success rich habits, which is the average person believes life happens to them. They're the passenger, while the rich, they believe they create their own destiny. They're the pilots of their life. And I know when I've learned that concept and I've learned to take responsibility, and I believe that the decisions I make today are creating my life for the future, it actually makes me behave differently, think differently, invest differently, run my business differently, and it gives me more security. Psychologists show us the more you feel in control of your life, the better you feel.
Yeah, it's also a happiness factor. The people that are the least happy are the ones who have little to no control over their work lives. They're basically being controlled by somebody else. Well, if you want to take control of your life and you want to be happy, you have to create something on the side that's going to give you the ability to have more control over your life. Now, there's other things you can do also while you're employed. You can become an expert in whatever field it is that you're working in, become one of the most valuable assets of the company. That gives you actually more control, because when people know you're an expert, they're going to treat you differently, a little bit with kick gloves, you know, because you're one of the most valuable assets. So there's ways of taking control of your life that puts you in control of your life and actually create happiness, long-term happiness or fulfillment.
Now, we talk about control, but that doesn't mean you don't take risks. But the rich have learned to take calculated risks. They're financial risks, emotional risks, professional risks. Interestingly, though, I found they take risks much earlier on in their careers to build their wealth. But I found once they've built their wealth, Tom, they seem to take less risks. They're more cautious. Maybe they've learned some lessons along the way.
Yeah, no, I've seen that in my research. And it's actually an interesting thing that goes on with the self-made millionaires. Almost all of them, at some point, it's usually in their late 60s or around when they're winding down from their work lives, they start modifying their risk tolerance. They reduce it. And why? It's because they spent a big chunk of their lives taking risks, building that, to build that wealth. And now they want to preserve it. You know, being wealthy requires two things: making the wealth and keeping the wealth, right? So many, you see it with these, especially with the younger, these what I call skill-based virtuosos, these basketball players, tennis players, these football players, they spend their money recklessly early on. They don't save and they don't have anything to fall back on. And they're really tripping themselves up. The idea is really, you know, you want to build your wealth and then you want to devote equal amounts of time to preserving that wealth. You know, you can still be, if you feel that your risk tolerance is more aggressive, you can still take a chunk of your wealth at some point and use and invest it aggressively. But the smart, wealthy people, what they do is they take another chunk of their wealth and they invest it in prudently, so that that wealth, they know for sure it's going to automatically grow and increase their wealth. So, you know, there's, you're right, Michael, you have to, you know, you can't just look at it and say, well, I'm done, I'm not going to take any more risks. That's silly. A lot of people who are winding down their careers, they live another 30 years. You know, so what are you doing with your money during those 30 years? You really don't want to cash out. It's not the right approach. And that, I didn't see that in my, they did reduce their risk, but they still kept taking risks.
Well, I think a lot of wealthy people also want to leave a legacy for their children and their grandchildren. So they've learned how to protect their assets in the right ownership structures, with the right tax advice, owning the best assets they can afford to own, not speculating anymore. And one of the things the wealthy do is not just leave their children and grandchildren assets. It's not what you leave them, it's what you leave in them. So it's the lessons that they've taught them along the way, the things that their children have seen them do, heard them say, experienced, just the conversations around the kitchen table.
Yeah, that's been a big part of my life as a parent. You know, I learned from my research that a lot of these self-made millionaires, they had really good parents, even though the parents came from poverty or the middle class. Their parents taught them certain success habits that they didn't have, or that they their parents had learned late in life, and they didn't want their kids to make the same mistakes they did. So they're teaching them these habits. And so their kids go on. Like I'm doing it with my three kids. I've been obsessing over the Rich Habits with them since they were in high school. And so, and they're all doing very well and they're very successful. It's the proof is in the pudding. This is what the wealthy self-made millionaires had good parents who taught them success habits. I'm doing the same thing. My kids are experiencing enormous success, especially one of my children. And so I think that it works. It's foolproof. You know, you just have to want to teach your kids these important success principles.
Tom, there's an interesting trend in Australia. I wonder whether you're seeing that in the United States that follows on from what you're saying, that the average Australian sets their financial expectations very low. And that's probably so they don't become disappointed. And they're hearing that and they're seeing that from their parents. On the other hand, the rich set their financial expectations very high, but that also makes them excited. It makes them have something to go for. But when you hear what the average person's after, they're not looking for much out of life.
That is an important point because it talks to the importance of growth. Growth is how self-made millionaires become self-made millionaires. They all start out, everybody starts out in the same place. They don't know what they don't know. And then during their adult lives, they learn certain things. Well, if you have stretch goals and dreams that you're pursuing that are really, a lot of people would say, you know, Michael, that's kind of too risky, or that's, you know, unattainable. And, you know, I'm not sure you're being realistic. The point is just the fact that you're pursuing something, whether you attain it or not, it's going to force you to grow and improve and gain knowledge and maybe even some valuable skills that during a pandemic could come in handy, you know?
So, Tom, we're working through the rich habits that successful people have, and it's the basis of our book, Rich Habits, Poor Habits, which, as I said at the beginning, has become an international bestseller. We're very proud of it, and it's been translated into multiple languages. But if the people listening to this podcast would like to know more, go to richhabitspoorhabits.com and get your own copy, or go to Amazon or any good bookshop and get your own copy so that you can learn the success habits of the rich and you can incorporate them in your life. Because in fact, you're the mentor for your children, for people around you. For if you're the boss, you're the mentor for the people that work for you. So these rich habits, they get passed on to other people and to other generations, don't they, Tom?
Yeah, that's a good point, because can you imagine, Michael, if you teach your kids some good rich habits and also teach them the poor habits that they want to avoid, they're going to be able to help that whole family break out of their cycle, whatever their cycle is, middle class or poverty. And then it's going to sort of be hardwired into their DNA through their thinking. And they're going to pass along what they've learned to their children, and their children will pass it along to their children. And you're going to have this generational cycle of success.
Well, to finish off this session, and there are so many more rich habits, I'd like to discuss them again with you in our next podcast, but it probably is worth following on the point you just made, that the rich people weren't all born that way. I know in your Rich Habits study, a lot of them were born with just average income, from average income households, but they became rich. So just because others have achieved that doesn't mean you can't. In fact, because others have achieved it is a reason that you can.
Yeah, that's right. 76% of the wealthy in my study came from poverty or the middle class. So, you know, even if one person can go from poverty to wealth, that means it can be done. Now, some people might say, well, they were just lucky. Well, there's a type of luck that they create. It's called opportunity luck. And it's the luck that you create by creating the opportunity for good luck to occur. It's by taking action, having goals, having dreams, and being persistent. Eventually, the persistent get lucky. You know, luck seems to follow the persistent. So this is a process. Wealth is a process. You know, you have to understand that. It's a process, and poverty is a process too. The people that are poor, Michael, are very successful because the process they're following is working.
Well said. So I guess what we're trying to say is there is a science to becoming rich. You've studied this for years and years. You've made it an important part of your life. You've written about it in a number of books, as have I. We have written it together about it in Rich Habits, Poor Habits. And once a month, we bring out these Rich Habits podcasts. So I look forward to getting back with you again in a month's time, Tom, when we'll go through some more of the rich habits of successful people. Thanks for your time. Speak soon.
Thanks, Michael.
Now, I'm going to continue this discussion with Tom next month. Once a month, in between the regular Michael Yardney podcasts, I have these Rich Habits, Poor Habits podcasts with Tom, which are immensely popular. Clearly, lots of people want to understand how to become more successful in life. And as you're starting to understand, it has to do with the way you think. Your outside world is a sign of what's happening inside. So the way you think is going to change the way you behave. The way you behave is going to change the results that you're getting. In between now and then, you can watch some of Tom and my videos or read his blogs at Property Update, or why not get your own copy of our great book, Rich Habits, Poor Habits, which has now been translated into 5 foreign languages. Now, if you want some help taking advantage of the property markets and developing even more rich habits by becoming a successful property investor, you can always have a chat with my team at Metropole. As a regular listener to this podcast, you'd know that we don't sell property, but we give strategic property and wealth advice, and we'd love to be part of your wealth creation journey, because 2021 is going to turn out a great year for property investors, isn't it? You can catch me in between these podcasts. Just look for me on social media. Look for Michael Yardney, or you can subscribe to my daily property update newsletter if you don't already. Last year, we had 2.4 million unique readers of Property Update. I'm very proud of how many people we're helping financially. And you can catch up with me more regularly by being part of my private Facebook group. Go to Facebook and just look up the Property Update Facebook group and ask to join. I'll be back twice a week with the Michael Yardney podcast. In the meantime, have a great week. Make it a great week.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Michael Yardney podcast, which was brought to you by Metropole, who help their clients grow, protect, and pass on their wealth through strategic property and wealth advice. If you like what you heard and don't already subscribe, you'll find us on iTunes or on your favorite Android app as the Michael Yardney Podcast. Watch out for our next show, which comes to you twice a week, and you'll learn some new ideas about property investment, success, and money in around 30 minutes. To get more of Michael's thoughts, go across to www.propertyupdate.com.au and sign up for his daily morning briefing, and you'll hear from not only Michael, but a group of leading property success and money experts. And just a reminder that the information you heard in this show today is general educational advice and not specific investment advice, as we don't know your personal circumstances. If you're looking for specific advice, why not ask the team at Metropole to help you?